Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Michael and Patty Show, coming to you live from the Charlottetown waterfront. If you haven't guessed, I'm Michael.
And I'm Patty.
And we're not going to say any more, no intro. We're going to get right into it because we've got a ton to cover. Not sure how long this episode's going to go, but we're going to get right to it. And this is something I wasn't going to mention on the podcast. I haven't really thought about it until I was talking to a friend of mine that's from Great Britain. He's lived in both the UK, the States, and Canada. Interesting fella. He actually has triple citizenship. So he's going to be traversing back to the UK. And he was asking me how to find an agent. So I helped him out there. But I did want to point something out. He was mentioning certain things about the real estate system in Canada versus the UK. If you are in the UK, the system there, from what I understand from my friend, is if you're looking at 10 different houses that are listed by 10 different brokerages, or what they refer to, or you refer to as an estate agent, you would have to go to those 10 different estate agents. Were you aware of that?
Yes, I was.
So the disadvantage of that is you may be dealing with people you don't really want to deal with. You've got a conflict of interest. I'm not sure how they get around that, because if you're dealing with the listing agent, and the listing agent is there to and has a fiduciary responsibility to the seller, where's your legal protection? When you come to PEI or Canada or the US, we have a different system. What you're going to do is you're going to find an agent that you click with, has the credentials, education, experience, and they're going to be able to show you anything that's listed on their MLS system and possibly more. So you're only going to be dealing with one buyer's agent if you use the system for in a method for which it was intended. Any thoughts?
Yeah, and that's the...
Use your British accent.
No, I don't have a British accent. That would be the preferred or the desired route to go. So if you are from the UK looking to come to Canada to purchase a property, it's probably really important to make sure that you educate yourself as to how the system works and you don't end up contacting every single listing brokerage. However, there are many Canadians that I have come across over the years that feel that they're going to do themselves the best service by reaching out to the listing brokerage because they're going to get a discount or a deal. And that's just not the case, or should not be the case, if the listing brokerage is representing the seller and doing their job right.
So when you're coming to Canada or the US for that matter, pick one agent, your buyer's agent, and they are going to represent you. For more information on this, be sure to listen to the past 84 episodes from start to finish, and make sure you follow or subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating and some feedback. Next, you had something you mentioned this morning, Patty. It was a pet peeve of one of your agents that they mentioned it in a Zoom call. And I must say it struck a nerve when you mentioned this, because I have the same pet peeve. And I've mentioned it before, and it actually got us some negative comments. What was that pet peeve?
Well, I was sharing a story in my office, and the story was based and referenced from a situation that occurred in Ontario. And we get a lot of references in Ontario. This is how we do it. In Ontario, these are important questions to ask about the well. In Ontario, this is how the legal situation happens. Or I'm calling from Ontario. The Maritimes don't usually like hearing that all the time.
Well, the interesting thing is, looking at this subjectively, both you and I are both from Ontario. We're born there and raised there. Is there's no other province or anywhere pretty well on earth that people have to reiterate the fact that they're calling from, or they're going to insert their opinions that they're from Ontario, and this is how it's done in Ontario. It's almost like they think they're the middle of the universe or the center of the universe. I've never heard anyone from Alberta say, well, in Alberta or BC, it's just Ontario.
Yeah, it's just, and I guess in Ontarians' defense, most of our legal cases and situations, because they have the volume, the numbers, they pull from the data and the experience from situations that have arisen in Ontario. There I go, using it, which then we all end up using as a you know, a template as to how should we proceed? What should we do to maybe prevent this from happening here? It's probably just because of the volume, but yes, there is a sense of center of the universe entitlement, and it is kind of entertaining from my point of view, but I'm sure not everybody enjoys hearing that.
Moving along. Patty, I'll aim this one at you. You're a skilled realtor, and I'm talking as a home seller. I know you can sell my property for far more than market value.
Yeah, possibly, depending on...
I don't think so. Because I know the buyers are going to be looking at realtor.ca. They're going to be looking at sales data. They may be looking at appraisals that have been done. They may go to the CMHC site, look at their stats. They're going to go to the Canadian Real Estate Association, look at their stats. They're going to subscribe to both of our newsletters that are sent out weekly, follow our Twitter feeds or YouTube groups. They're going to be YouTube channels. They're going to be very educated. And to think me as a seller is going to get double what the property is worth is really stupid.
Well, no, double, that's a little
bit of far-fetched. That's a lot. When I say
what?
No, but you see that all the time here. And what happens is they'll call you and they'll say, you're an experienced real estate agent. You have the best marketing. So you can get double what it's worth. And then what happens, it doesn't sell. And then the vendor tells everybody, oh, I had my house listed with Patty and it didn't sell. She was useless. And then they list with somebody else. They lower the price down to market. It sells in 60 days and they're a hero. You're not going to take a house typically and double the price or add hundreds of thousands of dollars to it and think that any agent anywhere is going to get that money most of the time.
Okay, so can I defend myself as to why I said, possibly. So the possibly comes in and it is a bit of a gamble and it depends on what your seller's confidence level is. If they're willing to price their property below market value, and again, it has to be in an area that we know we have a buyer pool. If we can create a multiple offer situation, again, you have to be confident in the market that you're working in, and you get people bidding on the property, it's a gamble, but it is a potential strategy to try to get above market value. So I am
correct.
That's
a totally different situation. I'm talking about someone that has a house that's worth $475. They want to put it on for $850.
Oh.
No multiple offer situation. No buyer pool because it's $200,000 because that's what you're getting into is you're getting into like the first time buyer pool or that $200,000 or $300,000, which is going to get you multiples. I'm talking a $475. To be more specific, it's 45 minutes west of Charlottetown. It's in the country and they want $850 for it. And they're listing with you because they think your marketing is superlative and you will override the market values.
Knowing all the details now, I would have possibly said a different answer. But based on the original question, can you sell my property for more than market value? It just depends on how much information you end up having. So thanks for providing the additional details that were needed to properly answer that question.
And your answer?
Well, that is unrealistic. That is completely unrealistic. And you're absolutely right. They're going to... We had this situation, Michael. I don't know if you have...
We've had this situation dozens of times.
But this just happened in the last week. There was a property that we had co-listed many years ago before COVID. And it was a couple. And they wanted...
Oh, the
like,
seven-year sale. Yes.
$1.7 million, I think, is where it started at. And we had said, best case scenario, 1.2, pushing it, maybe introducing it at 1.3. And we have been, it's been newly brought to my attention that about 7 years later, they sold for about 1.2 million.
Because the market eventually moved up to that point. Not to belabor this question, which has kind of got all over the place unexpectedly for the benefit, I suppose, of the podcast, if you want to say that. You wouldn't say that?
That's a discussion.
If you overprice a property, what's going to happen? And you can agree or disagree with me. It's not going to sell. And you're going to go through a bunch of different agents. And then when it does sell, it's probably going to sell around market, which, and I'm glad you brought up that example, this particular house on the market for 7 or 8 years going through six different agents sold for what they could have sold it for from day one without waiting 8 years.
Or they could have even gotten a little more and benefited from the 2021 COVID prices. However, they were reaching for the stars and it just, it didn't happen. And then lost possibly more money because of the cost to carry, the wear and tear. You know, the, they wanted to get on with their next chapter in their life, and that didn't end up happening for almost a decade later. So there's a bigger cost sometimes than trying to ask double and hoping that you get it. It's not a buyer's responsibility to buy that sports car for you, to pay off all your debts and finance or be able to give you the funds that you need to buy that bigger house. The house is worth what the house is worth. Hopefully, most sellers, I think, respect the professionalism and the opinion of their realtor involved.
Next topic. You're a home seller and you are a habitual lingerer. You like to hang around for showings. You never leave your house. You probably haven't even left your driveway in 4 years. And you want to be around for all showings. Is this a really bad idea or a super bad idea?
It is.
And why?
Not a good idea if you are a seller selling the house to linger around. Some people, there could be a mental health issue where they are paranoid that someone's going to touch their things. You could always ask your realtor to be present, worst case scenario, but that primarily is not the main reason that I have seen in the past sellers. They want to see if they can, who's the buyer? Can I schmooze with them? Can I see if we can do a side deal? Because I've had this happen to me. These are the reasons that I feel. So the negative, the reason why you don't want to do this, again, in my opinion, I'll be curious to see what you have to say, Michael, is it makes buyers uncomfortable. They end up deciding not to possibly purchase that home because they never got a positive experience. They never walked into the house going, oh my gosh, this is my house. The whole time from the minute they opened the door, they were in somebody else's house and they never made that connection. They can't go through the cupboards. They can't just have a free conversation. Doesn't create for a positive buying experience.
Getting back to our people from the UK or Europe or wherever, when you come to PEI and you pick a buyer's agent, part of that process will be to form a connection and share with that agent what you're looking for, what your positives are, what your negatives are, what you'd really like to see in your future home. So when I look at homes, my buyer's agent knows what I'm looking for. If I walk into a home and they are trying to sell me on their home, they don't know what a positive or a negative is in my mind. This is particularly problematic with people that think they're geniuses and can sell their home on their own, only to find out they're just scaring every single buyer away because they're pointing out things that may not be an advantage to that buyer. For instance, the homeowner tells me it has hardwood floors, triple pane windows, it's all electric heat, steel roof, and a heated garage. And as it turns out, I hate all of those things. So they've just pointed out a bunch of stuff I don't like, whereas a buyer's agent can say, yes, it does have these detriments, but it does have these positives that you're looking for. It's got the rolling country hill views. It's got a beach down the street. It has a paved road. These are the things that are important to me. But most importantly, like Patty said, if the homeowner is at the house or lingering around the yard, which they do sometimes, it just makes the purchaser just want to get out of there and get to the next house. It's not a positive in any way, shape, or form. So if you're going to have a showing, go away.
Yeah, I had a showing many years ago. My clients were a vet and her husband was an accountant. The most important component of their house purchase they were looking for was the barn. And this was a private sale. The seller greeted us in the driveway. I asked the private seller, am I good to just take my clients through? And he looked at me and said, no, I will be showing my home. My clients looked at me and I just smiled at them and thought, okay, that's fine. I'll see what this looks like. Always up for a new experience. He showed the house first. Then he showed the barn. My clients hated the house, By the time they got to the barn, they loved the barn, but now we're looking back at the house and it's too late. We have a line of viewings and they decided not to buy that property. The wife later said, had of you shown us the property, Patty, and led us through the barn first, we would have done our best to try to make the house work. So I was told by a broker of mine many years ago, this line, which I've never forgotten. No one knows what John Smith buys unless they see the house through John Smith's eyes. And I've always carried that with me.
So your buyer's name was John Smith?
No, they weren't, but...
Here's a trivia question for you. What does a sold sign indicate? When I drive by one on the street, what does that tell me about that listing?
It tells me that it is sold and all conditions have been removed.
So when someone makes an offer, there's going to be conditions, home inspection, septic inspection, financing, lawyer's approval, whatever the case may be. So that property is, at that point, conditional sold because it's under contract, but there's conditions. When the sold sign goes up, it's party time. All the conditions have been removed and you're waiting for the closing. So that's why the sold sign is so important.
I agree.
I'm glad you do. What about I'm sold?
That's a trademark for a company and it doesn't matter. The house is sold, whether it's I'm sold, it's sold, sold. It's off the market and no longer available to the public.
Weird texts realtors receive. Do you ever get those texts that say, can you send me more information about this property?
Yes, I do get those.
Do you delete them right away or do you usually wait until the next day?
No, I do not delete those. I will most times, I will send them to somebody on my team to be fully honest and transparent. If they can't take the time to say, hi, Patty, my name is so-and-so, and I am looking for some more information on this property. Do you have some time to chat, or would you be able to send it? Here's my email. I have a little bit of information, but the lines that I want more information on this property, if they can't take the time to give me a little bit more information about who they are, I don't usually spend the extra time.
I've received a few of these, and I thought it was people just being impolite. And as it turns out, what it was coming from particular websites, one of which is fairly popular in the States, where there's a button, and they push this button, and it sends this text to the agent, not giving them the ability to add or amend anything to the text. So you get these weird, creepy texts, and you think, is this a virus? Is this going to mess up my phone? Like, what is this? Like, normal people do not communicate like this. A normal text might be, hello, it's Patty. I'm currently living in the center of the universe. You've heard of Ontario. We're just selling our house and we're looking to move to the island. We're looking between $500,000 and $600,000 for a 3-bedroom in Charlottetown, and this one was really interesting. Can you tell me more about what would they ask? What would a typical question be?
Is this still available?
Is it still available? What's the overall condition of the house? And in your opinion, is it priced properly? Even though they advocate for the seller, that is a common question that we do get. That type of text would be responded to. But the text you get where it's just, can you send me more information? It's like, are you supposed to guess at the information they're looking for?
Hi.
ChatGPT, create 1,000 items about this house. We can text back to this message.
Pretty funny. I want to apologize. We are not picking on Ontarians. You keep saying we need to stop. We're from Ontario and we mean no insult or anything at all. It's just kind of entertaining sometimes.
Island slang. Speaking of entertaining, I'm going to let you cover this one. When you do move or come to the island, you'll notice words that normally you wouldn't use in other places. And I think it's just awesome. And Patty just has a few quick ones she's going to go over.
Yeah.
My favorite's slippy.
I know. And that...
The roads are slippy.
Is my
slippery.
That's my pet peeve about you. When you
see... Well, you're from the center of the universe.
So. Yes. Touché. I don't like... Slippy is one that just kind of... Why can't we pronounce the R?
What else do we have?
So slippy is one. It just means, as it says, the roads are a little slippery out today. They pronounce, they insert an R. So if you're going to put in a load of wash on the island, you might end up hearing a load of wash. And it's just the way they roll their R's in that.
It's called an accent.
Their accent, I realize that. If you want to say, you know, you're kidding, are you kidding me? They'll say, go on. So it's just like a short go. So they just pronounce the G part. Boat traffic. This is something that was from many years ago before the bridge existed, where the ferry, there was a lot of traffic lineups so that they could get to the mainland. So you used to hear about, instead of traffic jams, you would hear about boat traffic. And there's a lot of boat traffic today, meaning there's a high number of vehicles trying to get off or back onto the island. Go away with ya. That just means stop pulling my leg. Who's your fodder? Predominantly, there are some strong family last names on PEI, and they just want to know what clan you're part of if you are from a family that originated or that settled here on Prince Edward Island. One that my son, and I thought it was kind of cute, but so my youngest basically grew up on PEI. He was born in Ontario. He was 2 years old when we moved here. And going through the school system, the letter H, we say H in Ontario, and I'm sure everywhere else across Canada. However, here, they call it H. And my son, when he was singing the alphabet, would end up saying H. And I corrected him the first time or two, only because I just thought he was mispronouncing it, until I realized this was something that he was learning in school. So I let him just be who he was. Kit bag. Kit bag is a backpack. He came home one day and he started asking me where his kit bag was, and I did not know what the heck he was talking about, only to have him find it himself and show me he was talking about his backpack. And talk of dirt coming. So do you know what talk of dirt coming is, Michael?
No.
Okay. That just means there's bad weather coming. So that's my list of fun PEI slang that you might hear.
What is the acceptable amount of time to wait for an agent or broker to respond to an inquiry? This was an interesting one. And I actually went on the internet, did some research, and it says the average response time for a real estate agent in North America to respond to an inquiry is about how long, Patty?
Well, I can see the notes, so I would be cheating.
If you didn't see the notes.
I would say probably an hour or two.
You would be incorrect. 15 minutes to 1 hour if they're on the ball. But here's the kicker. This was interesting. 70% of agents take over 24 hours or don't respond at all, according to several industry studies. Now, that blows my mind, because I was always taught, and I may not practice this on the island because we're a little more laid back, but I was taught you respond to an inquiry within 1 to 3 minutes. Because if you don't, if you're in the big city, you're going to get beat out.
Oh, I would agree with that 100%. However, what if you're with clients? I agree with that. However, what if you're going to tell, you're with clients, you're showing properties.
You just say, wait a second, listen, I just got an inquiry and I've got between 1 and 3 minutes to respond to this.
Yeah, I have a lead. I want to make sure I don't lose out on other business.
Hold that thought.
Yes, that is rude, and I wouldn't do that to my clients. If you're able to respond immediately, absolutely. But I wouldn't suggest to our listeners that if you don't get a response within 5 minutes, that you need to move on to the next agent. I usually...
Give it 6 minutes and move on.
I'm a busy realtor, and I will get back that day to them as soon as
they're
I can.
They're off the list.
Yeah, well, and I can't help that. Maybe I'm too busy to take new clients.
So I think you are. We're moving along. Zillow, Realtor.com, and other lead gen platforms have hampered this point home. Speed to lead is everything. Top performing agents usually respond within 5 minutes, especially if the inquiry came from online or a hot lead source. So I said 2 to 3, they're saying 5, but what makes it really interesting is 70% of agents don't respond. And if that's, you know, who you want to deal with, that's going to be difficult to put a transaction together. If you're not replying fast, somebody else will, they say. Sometimes it's the client, but keep everything in the loop. I'm not sure what they mean by that.
I feel if you've done your research and you feel confident in the person that you've reached out to, at the very least, if they do give back to you with, again, within a couple hours time period, max, there's no reason
5 minutes.
It should take
you're off the list.
Then, you know what? I think it's worthwhile giving them an opportunity. If you don't hear from them that day at all, I would probably agree along with you. They could be away. There could be personal reasons. There could be, it's up to the client and what level their needs are. How urgent is it? It's real estate. We're not firefighters, though.
Is a realtor supposed to disclose if they're selling their own property? And I will add to this and include even have an interest in the property or own a corporation that they have shares in. I'll let you answer this.
I would be saying 100% yes. It is in our code of ethics and our rules that we are to disclose if we or an immediate family member owns the property or has an interest in if they're going to be purchasing the property and we're representing them. As a seller and a listing agent, the way that is done is it should be in the property overview that the seller has a, you know, a part interest or the seller is the listing agent or that the listing agent is somehow connected. They don't have to get into the dynamics of the family, but listing agent is related to the seller of this property.
Five top things you're looking for in a listing agent or a buyer's agent is honesty, transparency, and disclose.
Yeah, so they should be disclosing this, that point, to make sure then that you understand what you're getting into. I have a question for you then, Michael. I know you don't see her on the list.
Question period isn't part of this episode.
What would you recommend if you were selling your own home? If you're a realtor, would you list it yourself or would you maybe bring someone else on or have another agent represent you?
I would list it myself. I would disclose that, but I would not represent the buyer side unless someone's coming in with a full price cash, unconditional offer. There's no negotiating involved.
Yeah, and
or above ask offer.
I actually didn't even think of that, but 100%. If you are confident that you can be the seller and wear the hat as the listing agent, fine. But at the end of the day, you really should have another party representing the buyer and not try being all three people.
In almost all circumstances, if not all circumstances, whenever I feel there's a conflict between the purchaser and me as the listing agent, I'll absolutely refer them to another agent because I do not want to get involved in a lawsuit down the road, especially since things are becoming more and more litigious these days. Agent dismissing buyer's concerns repetitively. So here's the scenario. You have a buyer's agent. You're looking at a number of properties. Everything that you point out that is a negative or a detriment, the buyer's agent for which you've hired their services has a reason to put or does put a positive spin on things. I'll give you an example. We're looking at a house. It's right next to a nuclear plant that gives off this ominous red glow. The buyer's agent said, won't this be nice to huddle around at night?
So that you have an experience of the northern lights,
yes.
In a sense? That's, I would not be dismissing, and I've actually just gone through this too, dismissing a buyer's concern.
Well, you just had a situation that somebody shared with you whereas, and you picked them up as a buyer, actually it was from Ontario, and they said they were dealing with other agents and everything they looked at as a negative, the buyer's agent was trying to put a positive spin on things, which isn't their job. Their job is to find them the best property that fits their needs. So down the road, hopefully, if they ever decide to sell, they'll go back to that agent. So you want to develop a really good relationship with them and not just look at it as a one-off commission check. Again, honesty, ethics, disclosure.
And that's what these clients and many others over the years has felt like. So if you're an agent and you're trying your best to convey the positive traits or the location don't go so far as to making your client feel like you're not listening to them and have their best interest. It sounds like you have your best interest in getting paid versus making sure that you are finding that client the best home for them. And that's what my clients ended up feeling like, was these guys just seem to want to get a paycheck, and they're dismissing everything that I feel is a concern. And to me, I wouldn't want to be dismissed either. If it was a valid concern to me, okay, I hear you. Let's weigh everything out of the pros and cons. If it makes sense to move on, it moves on. I don't dismiss them.
And whether it takes those buyers an hour to find a house to buy or 3 years, at the end of the day, the most important thing is that they're satisfied with their purchase.
I agree. One of our agents in our office, 8 years it took, and we all celebrated about a week or two ago, just in a celebratory moment together. She's been working with these clients for 8 years, and they finally ended up finding a property that met their needs. If you're listening and you're that person, congratulations, but talk about commitment, loyalty for both parties. That, you know, and it's, I'll just say it's Trisha at my office. She stayed committed. She worked really hard, and she made sure she sold them something that was right for them when they were ready and at the right time.
I have a question for you, and it's a yes, no answer. Are you ready?
Yes.
You're representing a buyer. The buyer has signed a buyer's contract with you, as well as an agency disclosure. So you have a 100% fiduciary responsibility to act on their behalf. You're looking at a property with them, which you think is absolutely horrible. It's that one located right next door to the nuclear waste plant, where they're storing hazardous materials. There's a pig farm next door, and the weed factory is right across the street. Can you tell them, or would you tell them, don't buy this? Yes, no. And then you can get into your explanation.
I would be honest with them, yes. And I would say, yes, I'd be honest. They don't have to listen to me.
But that was going to be my second question, because I've had this situation happen many times before. Whereas I will say, no, I would not buy this property. However, if you decide to go ahead and buy it, at least you've got the information that I've provided about this property to make an educated decision.
I agree. And I usually create that rapport with my clients that work. And again, the benefit of having a buyer's agent representing you is you'll end up establishing that kind of rapport and relationship versus contacting the listing agent. Which my daughter, remember the situation, Michael, where my daughter had put in an offer in a community in Nova Scotia, and it was the listing agent, and didn't downplay the fact that it was across the street from someplace that for a young girl wouldn't be the safest setting for her to reside, and still tried to push her to make the purchase. I would have rather an honest agent saying, no, I would highly recommend against purchasing this property because of these reasons. But at the end of the day, obviously, it's the buyer's decision.
That was the house that, rather than cutting the lawn, you're cutting a bunch of needles that are scattered all over your front and backyard mm-hmm. from the building across the street.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I remember that. It was actually the home inspector in this case that said, you don't want to live here.
Well, he came to me quietly and said, the way he worded it was, I would not want my daughter to live here. And he said, you do what you want and your daughter will, obviously. But he must have reiterated that to me a few times. If you would like your agent to be honest with you, please just make that clear. If you feel this isn't the purchase for me, just be honest and tell me why. I'll still make the decision. My clients are really good that way. I just showed a property this past week to a client of mine, and there are so many issues, and I was so concerned. She's a single mom with two kids, and she was trying to find all the positives in this home, and I just kept looking at her, slowly shaking my head, no. And she's like, no, Patty. And I just kept telling her, I really don't feel, I think you're getting into way too much out of just desperation to find a place. No, she does have a home. It's not like I'm telling somebody to stay homeless or anything. This was not the home she was going to get in over her head and regret it. And I told her, no. And she did send me a nice text that night and said, thank you for always having my back. So
you're looking for a house in Prince Edward Island. What is the number one thing that you would look for before anything else? And I'll give you a clue. It's not located on the main floor.
It's the whole reason I said no to my client to not buy this is the basement. Wet basements, if it's just an island stone or stone foundation, and it is what it is, we do have a high water table here on PEI, as long as the foundation walls and everything around it, but wet basements, I'd say stay away from.
First thing I look at a house is the basement. There's a reason why they grow potatoes in PEI. That's because the soil is porous. So naturally, water travels through it very quickly, which is great for potatoes and carrots, but not so much for a house. So I was through a house last week that I showed. They had a bunch of obstacles, we'll call them, to keep things ambiguous, covering the walls. And there was numerous cracks in the corner of the house that was exposed, that wasn't covered in drywall. They were obviously trying to cover up the fact that the basement was leaking. When we walked to the lower level, you could feel the temperature drop about 20 degrees and the dampness level go up by 300%. And my throat was sore for hours because you could also smell or almost taste mold. They had attempted to repair this basement using hydraulic cement, which doesn't work. I told them that. I said, it's going to crack. Sure enough, I pulled out my 50,000 candle power anti-aircraft spotlight to show them the cracks that are already starting in this basement. When you seal a basement, typically, in my opinion, being a nut expert on basement repair, you want something that is more flexible, and pneumatic cement is not it. Take it from someone that owned a house with a river flowing through their basement that attempted to use that as a cure. So basements are number one. This particular house, you couldn't see the whole basement because 80% of it was covered in drywall. So unless you stripped all the drywall off, you're flipping a coin. I told them to walk away from the house, and they did. The other things I look at, without getting into any more super detail, is electrical panels, the manufacturer of electrical panel, and I look at plumbing particularly, and more concerning in the years at the end of the 1990s and early 2000s, particularly looking for Kitec, K-I-T-E-C. You can research that on Google. Anything else before we move on?
Nope.
This is a longer episode, and that's okay. This is going to be a super episode. Spec homes, cheaply made or cheaply made? Define a spec home first.
So spec home, they've used a template, a building plan, and
that's incorrect.
They're one that they feel is
nope.
Really, just one cheap finishes, and they just keep repeating it like it's damn.
Spec home, in my opinion or definition, would be a house that's being built to speculate on to sell. So they're building a house. They don't intend to live in it. They're just going to resell it. Spec home.
Oh, you're getting right detailed. Okay, fair enough.
So are they cheaply made or cheaply made?
They're cheaply made because they never intended to live in them. They're just building these so that they could make a profit and get on to the next one, probably.
I would not say they're all cheaply made. I would just say I would be very cautious, and I would certainly bring somebody along with me, probably a builder, and three home inspectors to go through the house and tell me if this is a quality home or not. But I was through a spec home just last week that every corner I looked at was cut. And I won't get into any more details. But just be careful if you're looking at spec homes.
Well, I was going to say,
it's too late. We're moved on to the next point.
No, you were still inhaling. When I think spec home, I think cookie cutter. So that's where my thoughts were going when you made that comment. So yes, not all spec homes may be poorly constructed or cheaper building materials, But typically cookie cutter homes is just a matter of trying to put up as many as they can with as affordable or inexpensive materials as possible.
You could have 20 different spec homes from the same builder and they could be 20 different plans.
Correct.
Because I find builders, and this is just a tip for builders, they'll build one house that sells really, really well. I had a house, I don't know, about 20 years ago on the water. I could have sold 1,000 of these if they kept building this particular house. What did the builder do? Every house was different. Every house, oh, look at this one. Oh, look at that one. Oh, let's try this. And I kept telling them, just build this house. This house. I don't know what it is, but people love it.
Yes, I know exactly which one you're talking about. It was blue, wasn't it?
No, it was yellow.
Okay, sure.
It was next to the blue one.
Okay.
Not making this stuff up.
Okay.
I'm looking through the sales here, and I was in an area, and I noticed that there is a house for sale for $1.2 million. Knowing full well that it's not worth this, and it's been on the market for a long time, I thought, where did they find this number? Only to look and find two houses that transacted within a few miles of this house. But it was back in 2020, 2021. Talk to me about COVID pricing and using it as a comparable for today. Because you've mentioned a lot of times that you're not seeing as much COVID pricing anymore.
Well, this year, 2025, is the year that I'm noticing the corrections are or have taken place. 2020 and 2021 were those buyers as a result of COVID were in a panic. 2020 were the buyers that didn't have to, you know, touch, feel, and experience the property. They were satisfied with a visual, virtual showing and were just paying whatever. There was multiple offers in 2020, not as many as there was in 2021. But they were purchasing out of panic and fear. 2021, once we were opened and allowing traffic to the island, never seen such a busy year on the island where our buyer pools for pretty much every single price point was so inflated and people were trying their best to outbid, you know, offers of over 100,000 coming in over the list price just to try to secure the property. Now, like what you're saying, Michael, with the example that you've given, that doesn't set the new price 2-3 years later. That was, you know, an extenuated circumstance. We were in a pandemic or slowly coming out of a pandemic crisis, and people were purchasing out of fear and wanting to be close to loved ones, wanted to be somewhere safe with their children, whatever the story was. But we don't live in that reality anymore, for the most part, and our prices had to go back on that normal inflation line, which is what we've seen why our numbers went down in 2023, our numbers were down in 2024, starting to come up a little bit in 2024. But I find this year people are confident, they've accepted to new interest rates. And if a property owner wants to sell, they need not to pull from the data. I will not go back beyond January 2023 to pulling comparables. I will not do it.
I'm the same way. So this particular house for sale, it's nowhere near Charlottetown. We'll just say it's in the country. But what they're doing is they're using COVID pricing. So when you're looking at a house and it's on for 1.2 something, ask your buyer's representative to show me comparables. But pay attention to what dates are on these comparables, because they're probably going to grab those two comparables that were COVID priced.
And when you say dates, what I know, just so that our listeners understand.
Closing date.
Yes. When did it close?
Or under contract date, either one's fine. Probably under contract's better because the closing could be 6 months later.
Correct. And that's what I was going to just point out. So what date did this property, like the firm date or go under contract, and what date was the closing? If those are before July, August 2022, those are probably COVID prices. If it's 2023 and thereafter, we were already starting to see price corrections happening.
Next, we're getting into nap time here and closing the episode off with PEI Real Estate Rules and Regulations, clarifications on listing status. I know this sounds like exciting stuff, but essentially listings have a number of statuses. One is active, otherwise for sale. Conditionally sold, we've talked about. Sold, but there's also canceled, withdrawn, and expired. And what we want to address is if this listing is canceled or withdrawn or expired, how long do we have to wait before we can put it back on the market with the same agent and brokerage?
Yes. Now, we had made, and thank you, Tricia, for pointing this out, we'd made an incorrect...
Tricia gets credit twice in this podcast episode.
But
she's a super agent.
It's just top of mind. But she did point out that we'd made an incorrect statement saying that when a listing expired, you could not, with the same brokerage, bring it on within the within 14 days. And that is not correct. So we wanted to make sure that we were clear because it's very important. And it, like I said, we have said in the past, if there's anything that you have a question on or you question maybe the information provided, please feel free to let us know because I'm good to admit if I've made a mistake. So withdrawn. Withdrawn listings, what that means is the listing cannot be shown. If a listing is being offered active on the MLS system, it has to be allowed to be shown. If you cannot show that property, it should not be active on the system. So we typically request or have our sellers, if they say they've got COVID, we just went through a situation like this a couple months ago, Michael. Our clients couldn't allow showings for, you know, five, and that actually turned out to be almost 2 weeks because it went right through the house. And so we just rested that or withdrew that listing. And then once showings are allowed to happen, then you're allowed to just put that back on. Canceled listings, for whatever reason, seller circumstances change. Maybe perhaps they are not in a position to sell right now. Maybe they didn't get the job posting for the relocation. Whatever the situation is, the listing is canceled. A canceled listing, as per our rules and regulations, has to be off the market for 14 days before it's allowed to come back on with the same brokerage. This has nothing to do if you're going to switch brokerages, but with the same listing brokerage. 14 days canceled listings. Expired listings, you can have a listing expire and bring it on 5 days later with the same, again, this is the same brokerage. You can bring your listing back on that afternoon if it expired and with a new brokerage. That's not what this is about. This is if you're listed with ABC Realty and it expired on May 1st and you were away and you finally were able to sign, you know, get your documentation and that, you can have an expired listing come back onto the system. Now, depending on how long the listing expired, you might have to sign new paperwork if it's a situation where it's off for 5 days or however many. And I'm not going to get into making details on that, but you can bring on an expired listing with no required time period.
Let me ask you this. Who cares about any of this? Why did it become an issue?
To ensure that we have accurate information.
No, it didn't.
Why?
I will respectfully disagree.
Okay.
This became an issue, and maybe you'll tell me if you agree with this, because agents were canceling listings and then renewing them an hour later, making them seem like they were brand new listings. So no longer did it show that it was listed for 30 days, 60 days, 5 years, it showed it was only listed for 1 day. This, in my opinion, is why we get into this big scenario and rules and regulations changing, because agents were trying to fool the public, making them look at these listings as if they're brand new, but they weren't. They just had been canceled 12 times in the last 12 months to keep it fresh, is how the consumer looks at it.
Absolutely. I agree along with you. And the reason they want to make it look fresh is because perhaps they've been led to believe we do have what we call our hot sheet, that it will come back on to the hot sheet and all the agents will be made aware again that this property exists. Maybe they felt...
And it gets emailed out again.
Yes. And it's a marketing strategy, not a marketing strategy that we should be doing. It's not
Right. So when you get your real-time search set up, which you should have set up if you're dealing with a buyer's agent that's doing their job, you will get an email anytime a new listing comes up. So this enabled this particular listing to be continuously emailed out over and over and over again, even though it wasn't a new email.
Yeah.
What new listing, I should say.
Which, if it's an IRAC property, you don't want to get into that nonsense.
Yeah, different topic.
I realize that.
Let's get back to basements, because I noticed here we got two sheets of notes, and I've got one line at the top, which says basement expert. So when you're looking at houses, since my priority is the basement over above everything else, because replacing foundations can get expensive and take a lot of time, one person or people, company you may want to introduce is what?
A basement expert.
Right. And who would I call?
Are you telling me a basement expert, somebody who deals
what
with foundations?
Company?
Well, we have one that I don't want to just say one name. I don't know how many basement experts do we have on PEI. I only know of one that's top of mind.
There's one that's been around for a long time that we would highly recommend. And then there was a couple others that sort of were good, but kind of tinkered in basements. If I had to recommend anybody, it would be that one company.
100% agree along with you. Great reputation. They're very busy. I just answered a question for a client of mine yesterday. She was hoping to have a foundation company check out a few properties. Just be mindful. It's no different than roofers, and they're not here. They actually do the work on the foundations. They don't want to be exploring, for the sake of realtors and buyers, five different properties to tell you which foundations are good and which ones are not, if you're not even going to be moving forward and putting in an offer on them. Because if not, there's over 500 realtors, lots of transactions. There's almost 2,000, well, over 1,000 actual homes. I'm just counting ends. Over 1,000 homes that sell every year. Can you imagine how much these foundation, you know, companies and the roofing companies would be out all day just inspecting these things? So
it's a good business to get into, just doing basement inspection. So if you are to the point where you're thinking of offering in a house that is a questionable basement, get a basement expert in first. I think that pretty well concludes this super session of the Michael and Patty Show. Would you like to wrap it up?
Yeah. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Michael and Patty Show, otherwise known as MAPS, the PEI podcast that helps guide and navigate you through the buying and selling of real estate and anything, fun facts and things that we share on the episode about PEI as well. We appreciate each and every one of you for listening to us and for hopefully taking away some really important tidbits and facts to help protect you and guide you through your real estate experience.
Be sure to follow, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, and some feedback would be greatly appreciated. Everybody have a great day, and thanks once again for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Over and out.